Hi, and welcome to the Breadwinner Podcast. I'm Niels Brian Lowe, and each episode, I talk to a guest about how they're maximizing value from investments in technology like Salesforce and NetSuite. Yep, I know, a podcast about CRM and accounting software integration sounds dreadful. But Breadwinner is out talking to customers, to partners, and to technical folks every day about this stuff. Breadwinner are constantly amazed by the business value that's being unleashed in this space. So, we've recorded some of those conversations to share here. Full disclosure, this podcast is brought to you by Breadwinner, who provide products that integrate Salesforce with ERP platforms, accounting systems, and payment providers. But the purpose of this podcast isn't to sell products. If you'd like to know more, head over to breadwinner.com. Otherwise, do just join us for today's conversation. So I'm joined today by Rich Law, Head of Solution Architecture at Mint Consulting. Hi, Rich. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Niels. How are you doing?
Very good. Thanks. We're delighted to have you here today. I mean, first off, tell us a little bit about Mint Consulting, what you guys do in the Salesforce ecosystem, what kind of work you guys do, and what sort of problems you're solving for customers these days.
Sure. Well, just Mint Consulting is one of the newer players in the Salesforce consultancy space. It was set up, I think, just over a year ago now by a team of people who've all been working together for a long time, really. So it's we're kind of a new name, a new logo in that way. But the team behind Mint Consulting have all been working together, you know, for collectively probably decades. So, you know, we're very used to working together, very, very comfortable working together. And, you know, we've brought that into a new company, Mint Consulting, really.
Fabulous. I mean, excited to have such a strong team. What kind of issues are you coming to you? What are your customers coming to you with, and what kind of problems are you solving for them?
Yeah, so the main sort of projects we've been working on, you know, we're not limited to this, but we do tend to focus in two particular industries, high tech and telco, which historically would have sort of two different sort of Salesforce solutions that you would use in those spaces, kind of traditional Salesforce CPQ for the high-tech companies and more of a Salesforce Industries play for the telcos. We are starting to see all that changing with the advent of RLMs in the Salesforce space, and that all kind of being brought together by Salesforce and potentially one product that can address both markets. But I guess across both those industries, the common thing is lead to cash. We tend to get involved in the kind of big transformational kind of lead to cash implementations, you know, taking things always from a marketing system, a Salesforce marketing system, sometimes not, through a, you know, Salesforce sales process, typically CPQ, and then often on into an ERP system. So they're big programs of work. They're obviously big sort of implementations, but also big changes for the businesses that are taking them on. And yeah, often involve a lot of, you know, the more complex multi-cloud kind of solutions and quite a lot of integrations.
I mean, that's exactly why I was delighted to have a chance to talk to you today. Is, you know, that's the space we play in, where particularly that downstream connection between the customer edge and the back office. You know, you talk about this flow from marketing, from the kind of initial touch points with customers, yeah, into some kind of transactional touch points in sales and service, and then onto the back office, the ERP, the general ledger, etc. And that's the place where we have a technology. What are the big themes you see when customers are trying to do those bindings between the customer edge and the back office?
Yeah, I guess, you know, working in the Salesforce space, you know, we are kind of the front end of that. We are the sales tool that the salesperson or the support person is using. And typically, you know, what they're selling in Salesforce, it needs to find its way into the back office, into the ERP, so that it can be physically delivered, it can be billed, all those good things. And, you know, typically Salesforce, you know, you want a salesperson or logging into a single system. You don't want them having to, you know, do one thing in Salesforce and then log out and then log into the ERP and do something else. So you want to make sure that whatever's being sold in Salesforce and is going through that CPQ engine is it lands in the ERP. You know, obviously lands what was sold lands in the ERP, so it can be fulfilled and billed properly. But also, so the salesperson's got a single system that they're working from. And typically, in the other direction, there are things in the ERP that a salesperson, as an example, would want back in Salesforce. So, you know, does that particular customer have a credit limit? You know, have they paid the last invoice we sent them? You know, can I send them a copy of the invoice that's in the ERP because the customer lost it, something like that. So there typically is a lot of back and forth between those systems, but really the use case is the salesperson wants to use Salesforce and doesn't really want to have to log out and try and find things in the ERP.
one of the things we notice is that, you know, customer edge solutions in sales and service are fit for purpose when they get to 95% accuracy. You know, as long as the salesman or the salesperson has got pretty good level of accuracy, the data is fine. When you think about ERP, things like inventory, you think about general ledgers, things like the actual accounting system, 95% just isn't good enough. Like, you need the actual amount.
When the finance people get involved, they're going down to like decimal places and pounds, aren't they? So, yeah, for sure. As soon as it starts getting into that accounting world and that finance world, then the levels of accuracy that can be tolerated get a lot more strict, that's for sure.
And how do you think about that problem when you're talking to customers, when you've got this sort of reasonable degree of accuracy on one set of systems versus a need to be absolutely penny perfect on another?
Yeah, and I think it's involving both stakeholders in any kind of any kind of project, making sure that even if it's a sales led project, that finance are involved, because sales are going to sell something, they might be happy with a certain level of accuracy for their forecasting. We're going to hit our numbers more or less for this month, this year, that kind of stuff. But, eventually that's going to find its way into the finance domain, and there's going to be a particular way that needs to be recognized, that reported on, and legal ramifications, potentially. So it's involving both sets of stakeholders and understanding what each of them are trying to get out of it, and usually quite different things. With different levels of accuracy and different drivers, but it's making sure that everyone's involved and understanding both sides of it, I guess, because it needs to work together as a sort of seamless end-to-end process, not just something that works for one group but not another.
So as you say that about seamlessness, because two of the industries you talked about there, in high tech and in telco, you need, I would imagine, quite a lot of closed loops between the sales process, the fulfillment and provisioning process out of the ERP, back to the service desk. So these aren't just one-way flows. These are continual loops that need to be flowing. These are time-based, telco, for example, these may be time-based sales. So they need to loop from ERP back to customer edge and back again. Multiple iterations over a customer lifetime.
That's for sure. And I guess one thing, Amin, that we try and do is we focus in these industries because we've done a lot of these projects and they are quite repeatable. Software company might sell a different kind of software, but typically that, 70%, 80% of the requirements are common each time. They're selling a software in a set number of ways. At one time it might be recurring, it might be usage based. In terms of what they're selling, but it's repeatable. And typically that integration with ERP is kind of quite repeatable as well. So I've been consulting, what we try and do things, we don't turn up with a blank piece of paper and just say, what do you want? We'll turn up with a point of view. This process is one that works for your industry, for what we're implementing. We recommend you, connect your systems in using these methods because we've used them before and they work. So it's not throwing everything out and reinventing the wheel every time we do a project, because we've done a few of these things now and we think we know what works and what doesn't, and we have a point of view. So it's kind of, more and more our customers are asking for, we want out of the box and we want best practice. Which I love to hear, because that's exactly what Mint was founded on, the fact that we shouldn't be customizing Salesforce if we don't need to, that we should be building layers of technical debt that customers then have to live with and support. So as far as possible, we'll turn it with a standard way of doing things, use Salesforce out of the box as much as we can, and rely on things like, connectors, like the Breadwinner connector where we can, but we don't have to build things from scratch every time. We do build quite a common integration like an ERP.
So as you said that, about the a lot of the value for system integrators now resting in their point of view they hold on the experience they hold. Certainly something I noticed in my career in the GSIs is that more and more of the value was aligned to our ability to bring a point of view, as you say, to have walked the walk beforehand. And that's where a lot of the value lay, in that relationship with the customer.
Yeah, I think it's in our experience, and our architects, Amin, are experts in their fields. We have architects that are focused on telco, we have architects that are focused on high tech, and that is because they can bring their direct experience of implementing Salesforce on those industries to the projects that they work on. And it's not, someone turning up never having works in that industry before, having to understand the industry before they can understand how Salesforce fits, is knowing how the whole thing goes together, what works, what doesn't, which bits of a company needs to be connected with other bits of a company for it to work. And you know, each industry has its own unique, you know, some you know, regulatory, I guess, in the telco industry in high tech, it tends to be more like the way things are done, you know, the way things are reported on, things like ARR, which maybe aren't so important for other types of organization. And I guess if you don't understand, specifically in telco, if you don't understand the acronyms and the language, going into one of those projects, one of those workshops, you'll be lost in the first 5 minutes. So it's understanding the industry and understanding the self-paced technology, I think we bring to it that is quite different and really adds to value.
Fascinating, and it's interesting how the industry has evolved over the last decade or so to make that more and more valuable. Now, I've got to ask you the question that's on everyone's lips at the moment. I mean, Agentforce has landed with a bang, and you know, everyone's super excited. What are you seeing in the whole Agentforce space? And you know, what are the things that your customers are coming to when they ask these? And I do love this word with their agentic context. What are you seeing out there?
I mean, yeah, this has been my entire week, Niels. This is why I pushed this podcast recording all the way to the end of the week, because my whole week has been full of conversations about Agentforce, which are great. But most of the conversations seem to be people asking where to start. You know, they've seen this at Dreamforce, they've read about it online. You know, they're getting all the marketing content, but they're just not quite sure where to start with it. You know, should we just jump in and do a project? Should we start with a POC? Should we use it for this? Should we use it for that? So a big part of my week has been putting together the main kind of approach to Agentforce. You know, for a customer that's coming to us saying we'd like to adopt this technology, but we really don't know what it means for us or where to start. And we've come up with this kind of crawl, walk, run kind of approach to it. You know, start here, start small, start with a POC, start with something that, you know, Salesforce will give you a template for out the box, start with something where your data that you're using to drive your agent is in Salesforce. And then from there, you can get into the more advanced complex stuff like data clouds. You know, start bringing data in from external data sources like an ERP, like a scheduling system, like something else, and build it up over time. I think if you try to jump in at the deep end and start building all wacky kind of use cases that the Salesforce templates haven't quite got to yet, or that is going to require a lot of sort of heavy lifting in data cloud, you know, that's going to be trickier than sort of starting with the smaller stuff, which actually could be quick wins, really. You could get something up and running quite quickly, I think, using the templates that Salesforce have generally available right now.
I mean, that's something we're definitely talking to customers about at the same time, is that, you know, having a data set on core that you can unleash the agent's training on is an infinitely faster way of getting something up and running than waiting to build a complex intermediation with lots of different systems and yep, structured and unstructured. I mean, all these things are clearly possible. It's very, very exciting times, but fascinating to hear you say that building a simple use case or a simple proof of concept or something on data that's held inside Salesforce core is a tremendous way of unleashing the technology quickly and getting value out of it. It's also great for Salesforce because this is a usage-based model. So yep, they only make money when their customers, our customers, start using this in anger. So really interesting to hear you say
that. Because it is so new, getting something up and running, proving the technology, proving the benefit, you know, proving that it can be done quickly and it can succeed. I think that's really what we need to all prove to ourselves, you know, that can be done. And we've done it internally. You know, we've got Agentforce autonomous agents up and running quite quickly as part of our kind of internal enablement, if you like. The next step is to get those things into our customers' production orgs and prove them there as well. Yeah, we find that with previously that the kind of Einstein projects that we've done, a lot of it is dependent on the customer having the right data to drive the AI to give the customer the experience that they want. If you feed it rubbish data, it's gonna give your customers a rubbish experience. So there's a big part to that as well, making sure that you're feeding it with case data or knowledge articles or whatever it might be that it needs.
No, interesting. And I guess a final question for you. I mean, there's clearly a bit of an inflection point in the market. I think Salesforce's share price hit an all-time high. There's a lot of excitement out here. What's your prediction for the coming year? We're coming up towards the end of the year, the calendar year here. What's your top prediction for next year in the Salesforce ecosystem and the integration world?
Well, I think given what Mark Benioff's been talking about recently, it's doubling down on AI and on Agentforce. I can't see that. I think the week I've had is really just the start of it, and it is an exciting time, right? I'm excited to do to do more of these projects, to learn about it. I'm sure it will only get more feature rich and more capable from here. You know, Salesforce have launched a few sort of templates for us to get started with, but I can see there's going to be, we tend to be sort of focusing on service use cases for now, but I can see that extending well into, you know, it can be applied to literally everything in Salesforce platform. You know, sales would be probably the next thing we see really being explored, and then beyond that, who knows? but AI and Agentforce, I can't see that changing.
Well, I've got to say, I'm feeling the same things myself. I think the storyline for the next 12 months is going to be Agentforce. So I'll be looking forward to seeing those use cases built out by companies like Mint and work we do with our customers and that Salesforce do with their customers. So I want to say a huge thank you to you, Rich. Thank you so much for joining us here on the Breadwinner podcast. For those of you listening, thanks for joining us. And hopefully see you again at the next edition of the Breadwinner podcast.